Force is with you, young Skywalker.
Drop it! Dead or alive, you are coming with me.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Like, friendly and stuff, and not just throwing in just nonsense out there.
That's what friendly. We're best
at. Yeah, we're best at the nonsense, but, like, we got to keep up the illusion that we're like, oh, hey, we're recording! Hi! You are listening to Adventures in Pod Taste, an AIPT Comics podcast. We thank you so much for joining us again on this, I'm going to say, Stark Wednesday? I don't know what would make your day so stark, but... whatever it is, I hope you enjoy. My name is Jason. I will be with you for the next hour plus of nerdery, where we're going to talk about all the things that ever nerded up Nerdtown. We're going to be talking about chin straps and why they don't work as a facial hair combination, but are very important in the actual wearing of helmets. Crime novellas? Sure, why not? We'll talk about crime novellas at some point. As you can probably tell by my hasty, and I am joined, of course, by my two stunning co-hosts. They are equally first and foremost. I will never stop saying that part of this introduction, evidently. Let's go with, for the first time in a while, why don't we go with the first lady of AIPT, my co-host with the mo-host, I guess, is another way to say that. It sounds fun. It's Ms. Allie Jackson. Say hi, Allie.
I detest you.
Because I said the co-host with the mohawk?
No, I'm just...
Is it the crime novella thing coming?
I'm just playing into our you know, we're only friends on the air. It's all a lie.
The dirtiest of lies. We're joined, of course, by our third co-host. You know him, you love him, you sometimes buy Mountain Dew from him. It's Mr. Diamond Dave Hildebrand. Say hi, Dave.
I don't know about life of me or love of me, maybe more like tolerate me.
And then buying the Mountain Dew off you, of course.
Yeah, I don't drink Mountain Dew. You might as well be drinking antifreeze.
You know, of the sodas that have like different colors, they managed to steer both too green and not green enough, because they don't have the radioactive green color of like Surge. But it's green enough that you look at it, you're like, that didn't come from anything natural.
It's more of a chartreuse, really.
It's like a pukey lime. Like, it's like a split pea lime, I guess.
It does not look like, it doesn't look potable, let's say that much.
Oh, sure. I wouldn't brush my teeth with it.
No. I don't drink it. You want, look, I'll share something personal with you. I don't even think many people know it, but here I am going to talk about it on the show. When I was a teenager, I ended up in the hospital with an irregular heartbeat.
Oh.
Yep. They had to sedate me. And you know the shock paddles they use to bring people back to life?
Defibrillators.
Yeah, defibrillators, yeah. I totally lost the word when I was describing it because I wasn't planning on telling this story.
They have them at my gym for whatever reason. Well, I mean, I guess I know the reason.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's a little shocking to see them.
Right. So they zapped me to get my heartbeat back to normal. And they asked me, you know, did I do drugs? Did I do this and pills and all kinds of stuff? And the only thing they could measure it down to is because I drank Mountain Dew.
Wow.
And they said the caffeine in Mountain Dew is definitely enough to do that to you if you drink enough of it.
Man. Well, how much Mountain Dew were you drinking?
But that's the thing. I didn't think I drank that much. Being older, I still
just
don't think
lunch and dinner?
I drank that much. No. Maybe easily at least one a day for a while. Maybe two.
That doesn't seem like that should do it.
Doesn't seem like enough, yeah.
But that's what their conclusion was. They're like, you know, believe it or not, they said that caffeine and sodas that high, because Mountain Dew's pretty high, can't have that effect. And
well, since
obviously
drink
I wasn't
now?
No, I don't drink anything. I drink water and like I drink a cherry Coke Zero just for like taste.
Huh.
You know.
So, wait, is there caffeine in Coke Zero? I don't know what makes it zero. Is it just the
it's just the sugar. The yeah, sugar. It has no caffeine.
Yeah.
You have to get caffeine free.
Right. But I mean they tell me not
brown water at that point.
Right. But they didn't tell me not to drink caffeine. They're just like, you know, you should probably calm down on the Mountain Dew. Well, I said, well, fuck Mountain Dew. You know, I'm done with that from here on. So,
yeah, I mean, for sure.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you the last time I've had one.
But it's not the coolest brush with death we've discussed.
Do what?
It's not the coolest brush with death that we've discussed.
Nah, I mean, it wasn't even like a brush with death. It's just my chest started beating funny, went to the emergency room, irregular heartbeat. They hooked me up to monitors, gave me medicine, said that this should convert it. If it didn't convert it, then they'd zap me. Next morning, I woke up, didn't convert it. They zapped me. An hour later, I went home.
Wow. So crazy. How old were you?
16 or 17.
Wow. That's crazy.
See, right. Around that age, I was definitely drinking several cans of soda a day.
Right.
But I was drinking Coke. Occasionally maybe a Sprite or something, but basically just Coke. But I would have easily 2-3 a day for years. Years and years and years. I don't think I stopped drinking soda until I was like in my 30s, I think. My sister yells at my mom because if you look at old pictures of us when we were little kids, you can see like Coke in sippy cups.
Wow. Oh no.
My parents still like pound soda. Like they go to Costco and they buy those giant pallets of like Coke and Diet Coke, and they'll go through them, just them.
Well, see, my dad will drink Mountain Dew. I go to my parents' house. My mom, I'm like looking for water and I open a fridge. I'm like, okay, I don't know what the hell I'm going to drink in here. And my mom's like, oh, well, there's a Mountain Dew. And I'm like, you know good and well I'm not touching that shit. So I got to bring my own stuff.
The last time, well, maybe like one of the more recent times that I went to visit my parents, I bought them a Brita filter and they only put it in the fridge when I'm coming. I don't get why they don't drink water, but whatever.
Well, at this point, it's a little too late for them to change their ways, probably.
I'm sure there's a doctor. My mom is a medical professional. She should know that drinking.
Well, that explains why. Medical professionals are the people who take care of themselves the least well.
I don't know. I know several junkies that might care to disagree with that. But Dr. House, I guess, is your shining example.
Oh, no, I'm talking about my friends who are medical professionals and who drink and eat like shit and smoke and, yeah, don't like to go to the doctor.
Well, we're talking about people who have shitty thoughts and shitty actions. Why don't we curve really poorly into one of our first news bits today, and it was that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I think it was last week, Martin Scorsese, acclaimed director, notable eyebrow enthusiast, and guy who loves the Rolling Stones for whatever reason, came out and said that he thought that Marvel movies were not cinema. He kind of doubled down on it in later interviews and basically just says that, you know, it's fluff. It's not, there's no real art to it, which of course most people in our neck of the woods were like, that's some boring ass old man bullshit. But it was exacerbated this week when Francis Ford Coppola, an even older, more hairy man, came out and said that Marvel films were, quote, detestable. It's going to be a thing, I figure, at this point, that we're just going to get every older celebrity that is related to directing or movies in some way is going to get this question now because it makes for an easy soundbite. But what do you guys think about Coppola and Scorsese's opinion on Marvel movies specifically? They didn't even call it like superhero movies. They specifically pigeonholed Marvel films. What do you guys think?
Well, doesn't that sort of speak to the fact that like Marvel has become like Kleenex? It's like almost it's a ubiquitous term. Yeah, like it's just become ubiquitous for these old fogies. Apparently my people, the Italians, just do not care for, you know, well, it's so silly because like these guys have made genre films. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they don't really have a leg to stand on if you start getting into the semantics of that. Like each of them have made some shitty movies in their day. It's just stupid. I think it's just like, it's a way that they can, I don't know if they would come out and say it if they weren't being prompted, because I'm sure that once, you know, once Scorsese said it, then, you know, someone was like, well, what do you think, Frankie? And he was like, yeah.
He's like, people aren't buying enough of my wine. Also, this is some cranky old man bullshit.
Exactly. I've had his wine. It's not that great.
Me too.
Also, your daughter's movies are not that good either.
Whoa. The Virgin Suicides is a good movie.
Anyway. I did like Virgin Suicides.
Yeah, that was a good one. But I don't know, Dave, what's your take on the movie gate, I guess we can call it?
I mean, I get it because, like y'all said, they're older now. So, you know, their vision towards that is different than I think it would be if they were younger and they were out. Much similar to some of the newer stuff that comes out. There's been moments where I'm like, wow, you know, if I was like 15 years younger, I think I would have appreciated this more, which is kind of bums me out at times because I want to like certain things, but I just can't get into it. But at the same time, they made their living being famous for crime stories, right?
Well, Francis Ford Coppola, not as much. I mean, obviously he was a part of the Godfather series, but he was a producer of a lot of things. I don't think that you can call him just a crime guy.
Scorsese, one of the big things. I mean, it's
probably what he's most known
for. Right. You say his name, and that's what you're going to think of.
Yeah, you think of The Godfather.
I think of Apocalypse Now first, but
yes, anyway. Because that's you're a fucking hipster.
How is that a hipster opinion? That movie came out in the fucking 70s. Anyway, I mean, I think that this is just something that happens every generation. There's always a stupid divide where people of a certain age don't get something and they don't want to get something. And these two guys, I'm going to focus more on Scorsese because he's got more of a craft background. Whereas, again, Coppola, more of a producer than director. But Scorsese spent so much time, like, sort of like a nerd, like, nose in the books, studying form and function and, like, certain cinema rules that, like, Foucault and all of these other classical film stylings, which is funny because I feel like his movies were lambasted by old Hollywood types as being crass and violent and like too much, even compared to like the gangster cinema of like the 20s, or well, not the 20s obviously, but like, you know, of the early era. I think it just feels like this is, again, I keep saying the same phrase, cranky old man bullshit, because it feels like the kids are just wrong and they need to listen to someone with age is what their entire argument kind of boils down to. Like, I'm sure there were older folks who thought that, you know, fucking Westerns were bullshit. Like, oh my God, it's just the same story over and over again. There's no artistry to Westerns. And then High Noon comes out and proves that, oh, you can apply art to something. And yeah, like, superhero movies were nonsense for quite some time. A lot of them still are nonsense. Release the Snyder Cut. But then you get stuff that transcends. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of Logan, but I know everybody loves Logan for a lot of its like accomplishments cinematically. Ditto with like The Dark Knight Rises. Like, there's a lot of things that have proven that you can make art out of something that is ostensibly based on characters for kids. It just feels dismissive and just wrong to just shit on something because you personally don't like it. Like,
they've become internet trolls. Let's like, this is like, they're essentially like Star Wars fans, you know, oh, this is not what I like. It's not my thing. So I'm just going to shit all over it.
Well, see, if anything, I think Scorsese has shot himself in the foot because The Irishman's getting ready to come out on Netflix and people are going to start picking that apart.
What was his last good movie, though? Like, I feel like he's basically just done... Like, the last movie I remember him doing that wasn't a documentary was Hugo, and that movie sucked. It was boring.
Yeah, I didn't like Hugo.
I liked that movie.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Did he do Wolf of Wall Street?
Didn't he?
No.
He might have.
That wasn't Scorsese, was it?
Yes. I don't know. I'm looking it up.
Yeah, it was. 2013. Huh. That was after Hugo. Yeah, he directed it.
Okay. Yeah, that was a good movie. But like, again, that was, it fit very much into the mold of a Scorsese film. Like, even things like The Aviator and Shutter Island, which are arguably not his typical oof that we associate him with because they're not about like organized crime or anything like that. You can tell that there are Martin Scorsese movies. They feel like Scorsese movies. He's got a style that he sticks to and he hews pretty closely to. It doesn't take many risks anymore as far as like storyline or cinematography or anything like that. You can tell a Scorsese film when you see it more often than not.
Well, in Shutter Island, that's genre film right there. That's, you know,
right. Horror. And that's sort of my point is like he does things that are not necessarily just like gangster movies or mobster movies, but it's typically within like the Scorsese framework. Like it's like applying the formula. Like this is my cinematographer. This is what we're going to. There's going to be long establishing shots. We're going to take some time to develop like a color theory for each one of these sequences. Like there's a lot that goes on from that. I forgot that he also did The Departed, which I don't particularly care for, but kind of ties to the central theme that we're going to talk about later on the show. The
original was a million times better than The Departed.
See, that's the kind of thing that you could talk about, Dave. Ali, you should the Star Wars crowd, so better take some time to talk trailer, the final trailer for Star Wars Skywalker in theaters in December. Just came out earlier this week, and it looks pretty good. I that that's a very simple way of like putting it, but I guess I'm just starting the conversation. I think it looks interesting. I don't know that I see anything that's like blowing my socks off that I didn't get from trailers for it or didn't kind of anticipate from a Star Wars film, but I don't know. I'm excited to see it. What about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, looks like a Star Wars trailer. You know, gives us supposedly some little tidbits of potential things to happen, but I think we all know better than to judge what's going to happen based on the trailer because they literally work to subvert expectations. My tweet that went out about it was yet another pop culture reference or pop culture property that uses the word always to devastating effect. Having Carrie Fisher say the very last line of the trailer, I thought was very, very moving, especially because it came out on her birthday.
Yeah. I'm particularly curious how they're going to use Carrie Fisher at this point. It felt like when I watched, what was the last one called? The Last Jedi. When I watched Last Jedi, they blow up her ship early on. Spoiler alert for that movie. Like you haven't seen it. I thought that was them writing her out.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
Then when she comes back and sort of plays a bit more, sort of not a pivotal role, but like she's around for the rest of the movie and like an active part of it. I was genuinely kind of confused. Like, oh, okay. Then what are they going to do in the next movie? Are they just going to say that, you know, are they going to like do it between scenes or something like that? Is her planet going to get blown up or something? But she's front and center in that trailer, so I guess they're doing stuff with her still.
Yeah, well, if they had gotten through, you know, all principal photography on Last Jedi, I think that they had started, like, they had started getting footage of her for this one, if I remember correctly.
I think so, too.
So, you know, I think they've got some stuff, obviously. And I know that they've said that they've got footage left over from the first two films that they were going to try to splice together, I think, to make it work. I mean, but obviously they were going to have to change the storyline, but I don't think we'll know if ever, like, I kind of wonder if they're ever going to say, you know, what they had to change.
Or, I mean, that might come out in like the director's edition, right, or whatever, like the DVD commentary.
I could easily see them saying, you know what, this is the story that you saw and that's what we're going to, you know, just, that's what you're going to get. Keep the mystery.
Dave, how about you? I know that you're the larger Star Wars fan here. How did you feel about this new trailer?
I've watched it Only twice, believe it or not. I haven't digested the trailer as much as some of the other staff on the site. I know they've all been talking about it. I do have my tickets already, so there's that. I wasn't terribly impressed with The Last Jedi, so I don't see how this one could possibly be worse, if that's going to be my measurement on it so far.
As a ringing endorsement right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't hate The Last Jedi. I just thought it took steps back from what The Force Awakens presented to us. And I know that's not like the popular thing to say. You can't dislike The Last Jedi for X and Y reason, but
oh, there's plenty of people who really hate The Last Jedi.
Oh, I know, but the only if you one mentioned that, you know, people automatically go to, oh, you didn't like it because of Rose or some shit like that, you know. And I'm like, well, look, she wasn't that pivotal of a character to begin with, okay? And don't get mad at me, that's how they wrote her. If you like her, cool. I didn't think she did anything to set herself aside, except, you know, her and Finn went off to some casino planet to get a code. I thought the film took Finn back three steps. I thought he would step up in this one and be a more presentable character and, you know, possibly a hero. And
he sort of was.
He felt stagnant through most of the film.
I think we've talked a lot about that, so I think we probably shouldn't take too much time.
He killed Phasma. That's all that happened.
Phasma will be back. Come on.
She fell into a pit of fire. You do not come back from that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. anyway, check out The Mandalorian where Boba Fett comes right out of the Sarlacc pit. No, I think we figured out that that's not Boba Fett in The Mandalorian, but still. Anyway, you were saying, Dave.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I agree with Allie. Whatever they showed in the trailer, you can't read too much into it. Like, everybody thinks C-3PO is going to die or something's going to happen to him.
He does say goodbye to his friends or whatever.
Right. But he could be going to get a snow cone or some shit. You don't know what he's doing.
No. They're
not going to, you know, kill C-3PO in the trailer on halftime on Monday Night Football, okay? I mean, that's not going to happen.
What is this, an X-Men movie? They're not going to kill a main character in the trailer. But that's because they killed Mystique in the trailer for the last one, shitty one. But no, I think that there was one sequence that I thought was kind of interesting where it looked like Rey and Kylo were like teaming up to destroy a statue of Darth Vader. It looked like there was like a plastic black thing that someone said was Vader's helmet. But when I saw the trailer, it looked like it was bigger than the helmet. So I don't know if I'm reading if that's going to be like a dream sequence or if that's going to be anything of like note, but that seemed like pretty heavy foreshadowing. Plus we heard more dialogue from the Emperor, even if we didn't actually see him pop up at any point. Right. And dialogue from Luke too. So, I mean, although I guess we always kind of expected Luke would be back as like a Force ghost or whatever.
So what do you think's that rolling out at the end of the trailer?
I don't know that I know what you were referring to. That's
Ray's looking at this black figure that's bigger than her, just like coming towards her.
All right, I'm going. I still have the trailer up. I'm going.
I assumed that was the Emperor. It certainly looked like it had a cloak on, you know, giant cloak.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at it now. It appears to be the Emperor. With some sort of like backpack apparatus or something like that. Maybe it's like a life support system. But yeah, that looks pretty clearly to be the Emperor. Because like Kylo is standing next to her too. And yeah.
So do we think, so quick, just yes or no poll. Because I'm interested to see what you guys think. Kylo will be redeemed. Yes or no?
Unfortunately, yes.
I think it'll be like a Darth Vader style late in the third quarter sort of press to save Rey from something or other.
And I'd rather see Chewbacca rip his arms off and beat the living shit out of him.
Does he cheat at chess?
He fucking killed Han Solo, man. He's got to go.
But he's still Han's son. Like, you know, I feel like Chewie would be conflicted about all of that.
So the Menendez brothers should be set free?
Wait, where did I say set free? I didn't say anything.
Well, I don't know. You're justifying the killing of Han Solo because that's his son.
I didn't justify the killing of him. I said that maybe his best friend wouldn't want to murder his, like, godson effectively.
Nah, motherfucker, got to go.
I don't know. Do you think they'll make Han a Force ghost? Probably not. He didn't believe.
No. But what role, I mean, yeah, how big a role do you think Lando's going to play?
Jedi Master.
That's the thing. I remember him being like front and center of the first trailer. Like he was like big focus. Like they're like, holy shit, Lando's back. And now in this one, he's like barely in it. Like he's a blink and you miss it cameo. Like to the point that while I was watching it, I was like, oh yeah, Lando's supposed to be back.
I think they just wanted to show you different stuff. I think you're kind of supposed to take all the trailers together. You know what I mean? Like it's almost one big thing. Like they're not going to show you the same stuff over and over again.
All I'm saying is that we see the three protagonists, arguably, and antagonist, I guess, in Kylo, all wearing the same outfit throughout the entire trailer. With Rey and Kylo, you can kind of write it off as it's their like warrior monk garb, I guess. That's why they're dressed in their like flowy robes. But for Poe and Finn, like why are they in their like, you know, desert adventure gear the entire time? It makes me wonder, well, yeah, they might not be showing us a lot, but are there not very many different scenes
in the maybe movie? The whole thing takes place in one day.
Maybe it's just real time. It's like a 2-hour adventure.
Maybe they knew how hot Poe looks dressed as Brendan Fraser from The Mummy and wanted to bring all the ladies in.
Is Oscar Isaac really that handsome?
Yes. Okay. Yes, he is.
I'll take your word for it.
He was super sexy in X-Men.
Oh, yeah, when he was covered in fucking like purple shit and looked like Ivan Ooze. Yeah.
He's very hot. He's very, very hot.
Who do you think is the hottest person in all of Star Wars?
Oh, God.
Like, gender.
Chewbacca.
Yeah, it's Chewbacca, obviously.
I mean, yeah, Chewie, 100%.
Dude's got to be hung like a fucking...
Oh, wicked. Okay. Nope. Nope. Like cut you off right now.
It's just hitting me under all that fur. I think that that's a harder thing because the easy answer for a lot of people is probably Leia, or Han. I think they're probably the two that people think of when they think of like hot Star Wars. Maybe people are into Daisy Ridley. I don't know.
Padme is pretty, she's got some absolutely beautiful moments. I mean, Natalie Portman is just gorgeous.
Of course, Natalie Portman is great, but like episode 2, I think, is the only time where they like let her be attractive. In episode 1, she's like, they try to child her up a bit, to use a weird parlance, because she's only supposed to be 14, I think, in that movie. And then all of her like weird like mom robes in Revenge of the Sith, and I guess they are hiding that she's pregnant because at no point does she look pregnant in that movie, even though she like, you know, force gives birth to Luke and Leia. But yeah, I don't know. Watto. That's the answer right there. Watto is the hottest character in all of these movies. Watto or Sebulba.
I don't know. I think the canteen band, you know, they got something going on there. I don't know.
Well, obviously everyone loves a musician. So
exactly.
All right. Well,
looking for accents. She's a Jar Jar lady.
Oh no. Nope. Not touching that. Even in jest.
Don't do it for you then.
I'm literally saying nothing. There's no good answer here.
Deafening. Or as Boss Nass would say.
This has gone to a very strange place.
We are just struggling for time here. So why don't we take a second to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk alternate reality versions of our favorite characters and whatnot. You are listening to Adventures in Pod, Taste in AIPT Comics Podcast. We'll see you after the break.
Well, you could just wash your shirt. Wash them.
No, I just wear them. I wear a shirt once, and then it's right into the fucking garbage with it. Because why would I bother?
Sure. No.
That'd wasteful of water to wash all of these clothes all the time, Allie.
Gotcha.
Gotta wash the earth. Hey, you're listening to Adventures in Pod Taste, an AIPT Comics podcast, where we provide civics lessons on how to best dispose of t-shirts that have been soaked in beer, or in some cases, La Croix, on top of your, you know, chest.
It's delicious.
In another world, there's a version of us where we're talking about politics or something like that, or, I don't know, we're discussing... we're playing backgammon and discussing Wittgenstein or something. But in this world, the 616 world, we're just a bunch of nerds who are chit-chatting about various things. So we thought, why don't we take some time and talk about some of these other worlds and see what's the what? What makes like a alternate reality successful, or an Elseworlds tale, whatever you want to call it. There's a lot of different variations out there. Sometimes they're called reimaginings, quote-unquote. While Dave is, off, scratching his back or something like that. Oh, no, it looks like he's back. We'll discuss it a little bit. Allie, for you, what is it about, like, an alternate take on a familiar theme or, like, series that it makes it interesting? What do you look for in one of these alternate takes?
So what I think the key is... Even if you're changing the setting or the time period or something like that, the key, I think, to a really good adaptation is being true to the characters. Because I think that's how you still recognize the property or the character. It has to feel still true to that character, even though they're in a different setting. So that's what I'm looking for.
I can kind of agree with that, although there is something I feel like to be said about series or just whatever it might be that take a character in a wild new direction that you have no real concept of what would happen. Like one that comes to mind is one that I haven't actually read, but I've heard very good things about. It's Superman Red Sun, in which like his ship crash lands in Russia instead of Smallville, Kansas. And the world is obviously radically changed because he becomes a member of like the Communist Party or whatever they want to actually label the Socialist Party of Stalin and Mao, et cetera. I think that what makes that interesting to me, although I haven't read it, so maybe it's garbage once you get into it, is that it's such a different take, like seeing what would happen with this one character whose lore and like physical acumen or whatever is so well established, and just seeing what a single tweak could do to their character. I think that that's also something that makes them interesting. Easy to flub either way, frankly, but I don't know, Dave, do you have an opinion on things that like a different take for a character or a series that would like interest you? What would make you want to check one of these things out? Oh, maybe his microphone isn't working. How about that? sorry to throw to you. You said that it wasn't. Oh God.
Okay.
So technical difficulties.
Cut this out. No, cut all this out.
Leave it. It's brilliant. We're gonna roll with it. Fuck it. We'll do it live. So I guess let's go ahead and talk about some of our favorite.
We love you, Dave.
Some of our favorite and least favorite versions of this. This whole thing kind of sparked it in my mind because I'm reviewing a book. Spoiler, I guess, for later in the show. Reviewing Mutant X, which was this series that came out in the late 90s, early aughts. Like I think it ran from 99 to 2001, in which Havok, the brother of X-Men's Cyclops, is transported into an alternate reality version of himself, in which, due to a couple of timeline tweaks, he was the leader of the X-Men, and Xavier is a villain, and yada yada. And it's this whole alternate world where it's like dark versions of the X-Men. And it's not good, is what I hate to say about it. Because I like other stuff that this author has put there, and I don't want to put any of the 9 credited artists on blast. But there is literally nothing redeeming about this. It feels very, like, edgy, but, like, faux edgy. Like, we wanted to zig when you know you should zag, sort of thing, where everything feels like a purposeful decision poorly made.
No, that sucks.
Yeah. And that's kind of what prompted this, because I was thinking, like, there's so many good alternate history or, you know, Elseworld story versions of especially the X-Men that, like, I can point to. I really, obviously the big ones, Age of Apocalypse, and everybody knows about the Days of Future Past, yada, yada. But there's, you know, a whole world of stories out there where you, the X-Men and various other characters are imagined in new worlds, and it works and it creates like an interesting dynamic. This is just not that. But Allie, for you, what's an example of a time that it works, that it's absolutely like knocks it out of the park, that you want to explore this new universe even more?
Well, I actually, if we're talking about comics, there is one that I read, and I didn't read the whole set of issues, but I read the first couple and really liked it, was 1872. It was Marvel, it was part of Secret Wars, and it's essentially Marvel characters, but in 1872. So
was this the one where they were like witches?
In the Old West.
Oh, in the Old West. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So Steve Rogers is a sheriff in this Western town. Tony Stark is, you know, the town drunk. Wilson Fisk is like the bad guy, you know, running the town. He's essentially the, the guy from Deadwood.
I don't know any characters from
Deadwood. Motherfucker, the guy who says motherfucker all the time in Deadwood.
Anyway. Oh, motherfucker, of course.
Cocksucker. No, that's his catchphrase.
Oh, it Cocksucker. Wasn't Motherfucker Jones from the Angry Bosses film?
No. Nope, it was not him. Anyway, but I thought it was really interesting, and it reminded me a lot of something that I really, really love in fan fiction, actually, which are labeled as AUs, alternate universes. So this happens all the time in fan fiction, where you take your characters from, you know, the one that I think has probably some of the most, like, it was sort of known to be a very AU heavy fandom, was Stargate Atlantis. For whatever reason, people love to take those characters and put them somewhere else. So, you know, it wasn't just the stereotype. The one that you hear the most about, I think the most probably common that outsiders know about, is the coffee shop AU. People are obsessed with like taking characters from properties that they love and like making them work in a coffee shop. I don't know why, but there are hundreds of thousands of them out there.
See, I was thinking more along the lines of like Star Trek The Next Generation was especially egregious with this, but like they would have episodes where it took place entirely on the holodeck and the entire cast was suddenly like gangsters or pirates for a day.
Oh, and sure.
Like then they would be fulfilling their familiar roles, but this time it turns out that, you know, Riker is Robin Hood and you know, Sir Jean-Luc Picard is Little John or whatever. But
well, I think what, you know, the thing that AUs do in fandom and what fan fiction does is essentially like taking things that they couldn't do for whatever reason on the actual show or in the actual comic and give people a chance to explore what that would have been like. So for Stargate Atlantis, for example, it's a lot of like, well, what if the Stargate never happened? Or what if they got to Atlantis and it never turned on? Like, what would happen? So this, I think it's a really fun, it's one of my favorite parts of fandom. They're fanfics that I really like a lot or AUs. So that really works for me.
Because they're fanfics, I'm assuming there's a lot of sex that's happening between.
Not necessarily. Not all fanfiction is smut. That is a specific part of fandom, but it's not all fanfics.
We're going to have to agree to disagree.
Dude, I can show you half of AO3 is labeled gen. Oh,
I'm sure you could show me plenty of gross things on AO3 or whatever it is.
I can show you not. Hey, they want a Hugo. They want a Hugo.
You know, after hearing so many like things that have won a Hugo Award, it's less impressive now. I feel like.
Stop shitting on my favorite thing, Jason.
Is your favorite thing actually alternate universe fanfic?
Well, fan fiction in general is probably one of my favorite things in the whole world.
Weird. You know,
it's not weird. I don't shit on your stuff.
You
asshole.
Always do. Are you kidding me? I can't mention that I spent any time in Japan or mention anything that is not a mainstream opinion without caring. Oh, this hipster over here. That's, of course, you lived in Japan.
I don't ever shit on the thing you love. I just tease you for loving it. That's different.
Uh huh. Back to the topic at hand. You know, it's with alternate universe. Films, comics, TV series, whatever it is, I'm always sort of a fan of when, and it's a common trope, it's probably a lazy trope at this point, when they take characters that I like and put them in like a life or death scenario or like an apocalyptic scenario. They're doing it right now with all of the Arrow, Flash, Supergirl shows, which is getting good reviews from nerd sites, but I don't know, I haven't watched any of those shows in years. But I was thinking there was do you remember when DC was doing the new 52 and they put out a series that was just called 52, and every week they followed like a different story. They did little arcs, but like it was a weekly comic, and so some arcs were very short and protected and yada yada. There was a bit where it was an they took alternate universe versions of the big three, basically, because I think it was all versions of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and put them in like an arena, basically, and had them fight it out to see who would win. And it was always like, no, this is the vampire Batman versus like the Superman.
Oh, yeah, this is ringing a bell.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of fun. Like, it's not great high art or anything like that, but it is like silly and enjoyable. And it answers what I feel like, especially boys who start reading comics, the one of the big thoughts like labeled in our heads is who would win in a fight, who's like the cooler guy, and you want to rank them. It's why Dragon Ball Z did power ratings, and that is something that everyone talked about, power levels rather. I don't know, it's very juvenile and base, but I kind of appreciate that. And yeah, you know what, it's something that you can think like, you know, there's no reason why Superman and Batman in our regular continuity should fight to the death. Both of them abhor killing, and both of them are like buddies and will yada yada. But it's still interesting to kind of see them be put into that situation in something that doesn't really have the stakes, I guess. That being said, I think that there needs to be more to a story than just violence, because then it just gets kind of like boring and fan fiction-y, which I know you like fan fiction, but
hey.
A lot of the fan fiction that I have been exposed to is not very well developed. And so that's where that term kind of lingers with me.
Well, I would say I think that was part of the problem that I had with Avengers versus X-Men. Because it just seemed like that was the whole point of all of those issues, was just like pairing off.
Well, they had the AVX series, which literally was just that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Is that what I'm, what did I say? Yeah, that's what I said.
You said Avengers versus X-Men, but like Avengers versus X-Men, the series had a story arc and things happened.
Well, yeah, okay. AVX.
Yeah.
Yeah, the AVX books, which I just like was boring. I didn't understand why I was supposed to care about any of that.
Because you needed to see Captain America one-shot Gambit for whatever reason.
That was so stupid.
I was pissed at that. I was such a Gambit fanboy. That was
Of course, yes. I'm not saying of course you were. I just, like, Yes, I can. Totally I know that, see, I can totally like, see that. I can totally.
I
see
knew that.
That
Steve was going to win, but it didn't need to be like embarrassing. Is all I'm saying.
Well, I think it's. I think we can't get off of this topic. And speaking of comics, without talking about Marvel What Ifs.
You sure?
Because it's now
it's going to be its own series on Marvel Plus. Actually,
it's going to be its own series. So you know, I think that I love the fact that they give writers an outlet to sometimes explore what could be like. It almost is kind of a fan fiction-y thing. It's sort of taking a premise for and running with it. Like, what if Captain America was a werewolf? Because I'm pretty sure that's one of them.
Oh, he's been a werewolf in the regular continuity as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that was regular, if that was a what if.
It's but it's been sort both.
Of. I love that they have like an actual, you know, real place for writers to explore what won't work for, you know, a major timeline story. But it's sort of that they are doing what fan fiction does in those books. And I think it's really fun and people love it.
Marvel especially is so hesitant to change their status quo, which is one thing that kind of worries me about the current run of X-Men is that they might just hit a reset button and put everything back to the way it has been instead of embracing the new and interesting part of it. But like, what ifs were such a mixed bag, I guess is the thing that I would say about that series. Because
yeah, but isn't that's sort of the whole point. Like it's a place to play and not all of them are going to work.
Yeah. Well, the other issue there is that those are always, at least from the several that I own or that I've read, I think they're all one shots. So a lot of those stories don't get developed the way that you would like. I'm thinking specifically about, there was one that I read that was, around the time of, because now I think that they only really do them as annuals effectively, but there was one around the time of Civil War, which came out around the same time as Annihilation, and it was like, you know, what if Nova beat the Annihilation wave to Earth or whatever, and it was him, Nova showing up in the middle of like that final fracas and stopping the conflict by saying, look, there's a much worse thing that's coming. You guys need to get your shit together. And then, like, you know, the superhero community puts aside its differences and comes together. And, like, there's, like, a final stand with, like, Captain America and Iron Man and Nova fighting off the last remnants of, like, the Annihilation Wave or whatever. And it felt like it could have been a cool story to approach, but everything was basically done as like a montage because they only had like 30 pages to work with. And I feel like that's sort of a latent fault with that series. So who knows? Hopefully the TV show will be better about it and kind of take maybe like a Black Mirror approach to it. But I don't know. Dave, I'm hearing you breathe. So do you have any opinions or anything that you want to get through on this alternate universe conversation?
I'm just trying to catch up to what was going on.
Yeah.
I hear Allie talking about sex in a coffee shop or some shit.
That's exactly what I was talking about.
I don't remember that story. Man, my memory is so bad.
But she was talking about fan fiction. Everyone ends up in a coffee shop, and then y'all started going at each other.
Right,
now fanfic is nothing but sex, and
yeah. No, that's you're all caught up to date.
Yeah, I'm caught.
Well, but, I think sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to jump to another one.
Go ahead. Go for it.
Okay. So a property that is known for getting adapted and specifically like really transplanted to another time and place is Shakespeare.
Sure.
And, you know, it was partly what I did with my theater company. We would set it in a different time and a different location. We wouldn't change any of the language generally, but just give it a different setting and twist. And the cool thing about Shakespeare is that you can do that with it. It's very flexible and sort of a testament to the strength of those plays in modern times. And there's a lot of classic literature that's sort of gotten that that twist, especially in the 90s. There was like a big...
The teen movies thing.
Yeah. So the two that are my absolute favorites...
She's All That.
Yes. Number one, She's All That, obviously, is 10 Things I Hate About You, which is Taming of the Shrew, which is a problematic play, but they do a really good job of kind of embracing the things that are fun about it. And it really fits kind of like a 90s, you know, girl power message.
And dreamy young Heath Ledger.
Oh, just Heath Ledger at his... just his dreamiest. He's so great in that.
An awkward dork, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Well, that was kind of his persona, right? Like, he was sort of what was the show? Third Rock from the Sun?
I was going to say, on Third Rock from the Sun, I thought that they at one point made him kind of cool. Because he had a girlfriend. He wasn't like a huge dork in that. More than, you know, being an alien and trying to understand human society would make him, but...
Sure. I don't know. I didn't follow. I mean, I watched that show, but I, honest to God, can't remember the nuances of it. But my other favorite is not Shakespeare, actually. It is Clueless, which is based on Emma by Jane Austen.
Aren't they remaking that too?
Yes, and I'm so pissed.
That Are they really?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like a TV series, I think.
They're trying to make it into like a modern Gen Z kind of thing. Like, the description sounded horrific.
But they already made a TV series of it once.
Right, but it was that was a direct thing. Like, it was...
Same. And it only had, like, Stacey Dash and Donald Faison were, like, the only ones who came over for it.
Well, and the director, Miss Gist? Was that her name? Miss Frist? The teacher. Who was the director. She was back.
Miss Geist.
Yeah, she was the director of the original film, that woman, and so she was back because I think she was the director of the show, or like the showrunner or something.
Oh, I didn't know she was the director.
So this remake is going to be a show or a movie?
I think it's going to be a show, like an MTV show.
I've been so mad about it, I can't even like read up on it because it's such a terrible idea.
That's how I feel about the Mad About You remake.
I think it's really fun. There's another one. Have you guys seen Scotland, PA?
No. I don't even know what that is.
It's awesome. It came out in 2001. It's got Maura Tierney and Christopher Walken in it. And it's based on Macbeth, but it's set in a diner called Duncan's Cafe. And so it's about these this guy, Joe Macbeth, he keeps getting, you know, he wants to be manager and he keeps getting passed over. And so his wife is more attorney and she convinces him to murder him. So it's really, really, really good. I highly recommend looking it up if you've never seen it. It's really great.
Oh, they still perform it as like a theater play, evidently. At the roundabouttheater.org, upcoming shows, Scotland, PA.
Oh, well, that's cool. I only know it as the film, so.
My favorite of those.
Oh, yeah, it's a musical. Huh. It's new.
I also enjoy 10 Things I Hate About You, I guess. But I know Taming of the Shrew. Let's see, beyond that, what else did they do? They did She's All That, which was Pygmalion, was it?
No, it's...
No, not Pygmalion.
You're thinking it's the soccer one with Channing Tatum.
What's her name? She's the Man.
She's the Man. Yeah. And it's based on Twelfth Night, because her name is Viola.
There was a Pygmalion one, too, I swear.
Yeah, but that's not Shakespeare.
Oh, it's not?
Nope.
Huh, how about that? I guess it would have to be probably 10 Things I Hate About You. I enjoyed, even though it was kind of a bastardization, I enjoyed O, the Othello with, what's her name? Julia Stiles.
I hate Othello. I
don't like her.
How dare the both of you? Julia Stiles is a sweet, working 9-to-5, evidently, according to some Zergnet nonsense that pops up at the bottom of almost all of my web searches nowadays. Actress who is okay to good a lot of the time.
I like Julia Stiles a lot. I think she's a very solid actress, and I agree that she works really hard. I just hate Othello.
the I love Othello. Othello is my favorite one of those plays.
Really?
We're talking about one of those. If we were going to talk about the different time and eras, the best reimagining of a Shakespeare that I've actually seen was from like the BBC version of Othello, in which it's set in the American Civil War. And Iago is played by Sir Ian McKellen.
I would argue that his Richard III, that's set during World War II, is probably one of the strongest Shakespearean adaptations.
Well, why don't we just talk about that fucking Hamlet remake with, what's his name?
I knew that was going to come up.
Which one?
The one with Ethan Hawke?
Ethan Hawke? Ugh, vomit. Yeah, no. Nope.
Then there was also that other one, the Kenneth Branagh one that had a...
The Branagh one is actually pretty great, except for Branagh.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh. You don't... Although he was a good Henry V.
Okay, here's my problem.
He was a good Iago, too, in his version.
He's an excellent Iago, because he didn't... I don't think he directed that.
Ooh, he Othello. Might have.
Because he's not good at directing himself, because... He thinks of every character that he plays as a hero, and Hamlet is not a hero. You do not put triumphant horn music behind to be or not to be, because it's a speech about suicide and is not heroic. This is my beef with Branagh as an actor director. He's too old to play Hamlet, but everyone else. Oh God, he played
Henry V. Henry V is supposed to be like 14 years old.
Yeah, no, it's. I do not care for. I love him. Like, I love him in Much Ado with him and Emma Thompson and.
Kevin Kline, was he in that one? That's Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's Midsummer. No, it was. I just saw him. Batman. Michael Keaton plays Dogberry in that.
Oh, I don't think
he's the comic relief, and Emma Thompson and Kate Beckinsale. And the guy from fuck a duck. Anyway, Denzel Washington is in it too, and Keanu Reeves. Everyone is in that movie, and it's delightful. It's Keanu so good.
Shakespeare play.
Yeah, he plays the villain, the ultimate villain, and he gives one of his big villain speeches. I'm not kidding you. While getting a back massage in a very homoerotic way, covered in oil. It's great.
You know, he could make a pretty good Michael Cassio. Now we're talking about Othello. Oh man, I'm just gonna bring everything back to Othello.
I cannot believe you like
Othello. How dare you? How dare you?
It's garbage.
It is not. It's excellent.
It is garbage.
It is one of the first pieces of fiction to be viewed from the villain's perspective.
I do not buy that Othello would kill Desdemona based on the evidence of a hair.
It was a handkerchief. It was his mother's handkerchief.
Bullshit. Bullshit. He would not. I don't buy it.
Michael Cassio was the young hot stud with big dick energy coming through like fucking Frank Thomas, the Big Hurt coming by. And he was like, I'm not about to fucking put up with this shit. I don't trust this shit. My wife is young. She doesn't necessarily spend a lot of time with me because I've got this big important government job. But she spent an awful lot of time with my handsome fucking big dick energy dude behind me. Like, then all of a sudden he's got his right hand man being like, man, I don't know if you want to hear what I've been hearing about your wife and Cassio. And he's like, no, I don't want to hear it. Fucking tell me.
I don't buy it. Come on, I don't buy it.
And like, that's the point, is Iago drills him until he's so uncomfortable and like distrustful that the slightest bit of evidence kind of gives it away.
I don't buy it. I don't like it.
You don't understand. You've not met. I don't believe this to be true, but you clearly haven't met many possessive, jealous men.
It is
very believable to me that somebody, especially somebody who is again a war hero, he's a fucking general in the days when that meant he was on the front lines of a battle, and like he's not averse or unfamiliar with violence at all, and. His wife is fucking some other dude, as far as he knows. He's got the proof, and she refuses to, like, own up to it to the point that it drives him crazy. It's a play about a guy being driven insane by circumstance.
Well, then you should, you know what? I would love to see Othello done as, like, a modern, like,
It's called, you know, Oh! It exists!
incel bullshit or like that kind of like take on a take well, on the toxic problem with masculinity
that is that incels do not have girlfriends.
Okay, sure, but then but at least like modern toxic masculinity, you know, that
instead of classic toxic masculinity, which is exactly what it's about.
Okay,
this time it would be in the coffee shop.
So argumentative tonight. You are just like attacking me for every little thing. We just turned this
into like a Shakespeare debate. I can't believe you don't like Othello.
I hate Othello. It's like the one that I really, really like. You'll never convince me. Oh, but let's, okay, so talking about, you know, adaptations. Right. Are you familiar with the Sassy Best Friend shorts that are all from the Othello one is pretty great. I love the bit, stop saying Otello, it's pretentious. Makes me laugh.
Wouldn't it be Oteo? I also never understood that game, Othello. That I'll be on your side if you want to shit on it, because I have no idea how that game is supposed to be played.
There's a game?
Yeah, it's like a Chinese checkers game, but it's called Othello, and the pieces are black or white. And I think it's like based off of backgammon or something. Well, I don't know. It never made sense, but I saw it in like my cousin's like closet or something like that, or like, you know, like over at a family friend's house among their games, and I'm like, what the fuck is this? And it was before I even knew what Othello the play was. And yeah, anyway, hey, you were listening to Adventures in Pod Taste in the IPT Comics Podcast. We got really off topic and we're running low on time, so why don't we go into our weekly picks where we discuss the things we're reading, watching, playing, and basically just overall enjoying over the past couple of days. I'll go first, actually, since it's fresh in my mind, and it'll give Allie time to calm down and realize that Othello is a great play. Reading, as I said before, I was reading Mutant X, which is a series from the 90s. It's not very good. But I have also been reading current X-Men series, X-Men, as it's likely known. And it's okay. It's the first book in the Hickman era that's not part of the initial event that set everything in motion, and it's clear that they're building to something, and there's all this hoopla about whether or not Wolverine and Jean Grey and Cyclops are having three ways all the time, but I enjoy it so far. I'm not a big Lanil Francis Yu fan, and he's doing the art on this book. I feel like that's going to probably dampen my enthusiasm for it. Temper. But temper is probably good. It tampers with my enthusiasm in a sense, but in any case, it's okay. I'll be checking out the next couple issues at least. Playing, still almost done with what's it called? Assassin's Creed at this point. I've reunited my mother and father, and now I have to save my brother from the cult. So I feel like I'm almost done, hopefully. I watched some of Big Mouth this weekend, and that was pretty good. But I also started watching, I started watching Top Chef, like last season's Top Chef. That's not very interesting. It's a good show. Check it out. Allie, what about you? What you're reading, what you're watching, what you're playing?
So I continued with my spooky, ooky, ooky Halloween viewing. And so this weekend, Saturday, was garbage. It was cold. It was rainy. There was literally no point to even change out of pajamas. So the boy and I...
Those were great horror movie days.
It was a great horror movie day. So the boy and I watched all of The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
That reminds me, I watched Marianne, sorry. But anyway, go ahead.
He had watched it all last year, and I did not, because, again, I was not in a horror place last year. But he was watching it. He had just started it, and I came in and sat down and was like, I don't know, I'm in the mood for this. Let's do it. And man, is it good. It's really, really good. I'm really glad that I watched it. And I'm actually, even once we got through the whole thing, I'm going back and rewatching it, because it's one of these. Did either of you guys watch it last year when it came out?
Yep.
You know, so you know that it takes you through time. Like, you're learning more and more and more about the story. You don't see the full thing until the very end. So I'm going back through now and seeing all the moments that they kind of build you to, and the little hints that they're giving you through. Also, fun fact, it was filmed in Atlanta. and we have friends who are in the show, and specifically they play ghosts. And
I was going to say, you do know about all of the hidden ghosts in all yes. of the scenes.
So that's what we're...
Once I found one that became like, unfortunately, it might have ruined a little bit of the viewing experience because the missus and I would watch it and be like, oh, there's one.
Look right.
The window back there. Like,
so that's what I'm doing now. Like, I kind of went through it without doing that the first time. So now I'm kind of going back and going, oh, fuck, there's a guy in the corner and I didn't even notice him. And like, oh, there's our friend. And our friend is in like one of the most scary, like, I'm like, it's like, Where's Waldo of horror? You totally don't notice him until you really look for him. And then it's like, oh, holy shit. There's like a big bald guy. Just like his face is just sitting by the stairs. And it's really freaky. So, it's phenomenal, though I would say, as somebody who has lost a family member to suicide, there is that a whole episode that takes place like with the family in the funeral home sort of mourning and dealing with the loss of this person in their life. And it was a lot more realistic and heartfelt than I was anticipating. And I think that says something for the quality of the show. Like, it's more than just, you know, a slap you in the face horror film. It's really about trauma and the after effects of that with a family. So it's awesome. I'm really, really glad I watched it, and give it a huge recommendation if you have not seen it.
Cool. Dave, how about you? What you reading, what you watching, what you playing?
First, let me say that I've enjoyed listening to y'all talk tonight. I had mic issues. I came on late. It was still kind of screwy. That's why I didn't like chime in. But at the same time, I didn't want to ruin y'all's momentum and flow. It was just entertaining to hear y'all go back and forth. And if anything, I'm going to maybe tackle some Shakespeare, because I never have been huge into Shakespeare. So maybe I'll start with Othello and work my way from there.
I will give you recommendations of ones I think you would like.
As for me, reading... It's still October, so I'm not able to sit down and read yet. I'm still running around doing stuff. And I'm still watching my 31 horror movies for 31 Days of Horror. Since we last week, I've watched Three from Hell, Sleepaway Camp, I Drink Your Blood, Vamp, the original Suspiria, and Killer Nun. Along with a handful of Friday the 13th films.
I've seen all of those and a handful of the ones that you mentioned before. I Drink Your Blood is fun.
Yes, I enjoyed that again. Playing. If anyone plays FIFA, I hit the lottery in Ultimate Team. I actually packed a Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. Which is like, if you go and sell it on the marketplace, is the most expensive player on the marketplace. However, I'm making an Italian team this year, so yeah, I hit the jackpot. I'm not selling Ronaldo this year. And that's been my short, quick week.
Huh. Well, I'm just going to add, I watched Marianne. It's a great, scary show. I realized it after the fact. It's a French show about a witch, I guess, that haunts this woman who is a writer, sort of like Stephen King. It's really good. Watch it in French. And yeah, you're listening to Adventures in Pod Taste, an AIPT Comics podcast. We thank you so much for joining us this time. If you like the show, please like, share, subscribe, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Pod Taste Podcast. You can follow my co-hosts, Dave Hildebrand, online at Psychotic, S-Y-C-O-T-I-C, on Twitter, Psychotic, S-Y-C-O-T-I-C, _ episode on Instagram, Allie at Allie Jack on Instagram and Twitter, as well as AllieJack Cosplay on Instagram.
AllieJack _ cosplay.
There you go. And I'm Jason. You can find me at Felix Lancaster on everything that's social. Also, enjoy us on AIPTcomics.com. Check out the site. Check out the reviews we write and all the good things that we do. And we'll catch you next time on Adventures in Pod Taste and AIPT Comics podcast.
Good night, Japan.
Good night, Japan.
Good night, Japan.